Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The year 2026 is turning into a watershed moment. For many, it's when the world turned upside down, a time when geopolitics trumped international law and longstanding allies are at odds with each other, and wars of aggression become commonplace. Crosstalking the world turned upside down, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. Also in New York, we have Michael Rossi. He is a lecturer of political science at Rutgers University. And in Prague, we cross to Jason Zaharis. He is an independent journalist and geopolitical analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Michael, let me go to you first here, because I try to be contrarian on this program, and there's plenty to be contrarian about. I'm titling this program, The World Turned Upside Down, and I think you can make an argument, at least for some people, it is a world that has been turned upside down. But in other ways, it seems like kind of business as usual. How do you frame what we've experienced in this first 2 weeks of this new year?
Well, I think that we also need to recognize that we are approaching the first year of Trump's second term in the White House. And it almost seems like this is now him and his administration getting ready to perhaps unleash what they have been unleashing in the past 2 weeks. And this is something that we can expect to see over the next few weeks and months here. We talk about business as usual. Trump has been making claims about annexing Greenland and referring to Canada as the 51st state and initiating all kinds of regime changes in rogue states around the world, from Venezuela to Iran. I went to bed last night thinking I was going to wake up this morning to find that we had initiated strikes. And apparently, at the absolute last moment, he called it off, at least for now. Wow. I'll finish off the intro by saying, look, I teach a course on conflict resolution, and the first thing that I teach my students at the beginning of every semester is the immutable number one rule. Reality is almost always dictated by the most insane person in the room. And I think we all know who that major character is for 2026.
Okay, well, Lionel, Michael's already mentioned we're approaching the one-year mark of Trump 2.0. But tell me which Trump is in charge right now, because a little over a year ago, we had Trump 1. He campaigned against interventions, foreign interventions and nation building. And then at the end of last year, we had this new national security strategy, which kind of looked like partitioning the world into spheres of influence. And now we have, well, he's only constrained by his morality when it comes to his decision making. That's an amazing transformation, at least rhetorically, Lionel.
Touche on the rhetorically. I'm going to speak right now, not as a representative of the administration, but as somebody who lives here in New York City and also knows what Americans think. If I had to explain President Trump to somebody going into any negotiation, I would say, do not necessarily believe that what is happening today is going to be the trend or is going to be locked in granite or chiseled in granite from now on. That's not to say that he is protean or changing his mind or lying, but do not necessarily think that what happens today is going to be the message later. One of the things that he has done historically, both in business and in negotiating, sometimes is to start off so strong, so powerful, and then retreat backwards so you'll think, I'm making progress. Now, for whatever it's worth, and you can analyze this all you want, he is who he is. And there are many, many people in this country, and that's very, very critical, who say, now that's the Trump we remember. This is what we want. America at the top, again, calling the shots, scaring the world. Remember during Vietnam when Nixon tried to portray himself as the crazy one, and then Kissinger would say, kind of like good cop, bad cop? Trump sometimes can be good cop, bad cop all by himself. So as of the day we are watching this, this is strategic. It's not by accident. What you might think to be is, that was a flippant, errant comment. I respectfully submit it's deliberate.
Well, I wish that would be encouraging, but I'm sorry, Lionel, I'm not really convinced. And oh, by the way,
I'm not here to encourage you.
Richard Nixon ended a war; he didn't start that numerous wars. I give him credit for that. Jason, kind of an extrapolation from what Lionel had to say. I mean, a lot of this is kind of like theater and impulse. Obviously, it took a lot of planning to kidnap Maduro, but Trump wanted to get in and he wanted to get out. Okay. And I think, you know, as reflecting on what Michael had to say, I think Trump might have just kind of pulled back on Iran, temporarily at least, because he didn't see an easy, quick exit strategy. Now, when it comes to Greenland, well, feel sorry for the people of Greenland, because there's nothing really they can do, nothing the European Union can do, and NATO is terrified of upsetting daddy. So, you know, this is a lot of drama. Trump loves the attention. We all know that. But at this point, he likes to do these things at low cost. Jason.
Well, when it comes to Trump's foreign policy, it's much less Trump as a person and more just the global power dynamic that revolves around U.S. foreign policy. So, the entire goal of U.S. foreign policy has been to maintain this unipolar liberal order that was established in 1991 with the collapse of the Soviet Union, you know, starting wars, fomenting regime change for resources and for Israel, for that matter. That's a major factor pushing his aggressive rhetoric against Iran. But that's been a staple of U.S. foreign policy, going all the way back to the coups in Iran and Guatemala, and to the Yom Kippur War in 73. And it's been a common consensus among American presidents going back to George H.W. Bush, which is when we saw the neocons take over the foreign policy establishment. But what matters most to the U.S. foreign policy establishment, first and foremost, everything else is a distant second and third, is to maintain the hegemony of the U.S. dollar, primarily through debt entrapment, weaponized through the IMF and World Bank. It was like President Hugo Chavez said in his 2006 UN address, the United States government does not want peace, but to impose exploitation, plunder, and hegemony through war. But I guess the two areas where Trump has primarily differed from his predecessors is the fact that he has taken the State Department and CIA cutouts, like USAID, like the National Endowment for Democracy, he's taken them out of the picture. And he's now emphasized direct operations by the CIA, particularly in Venezuela, where we saw the kidnapping of President Maduro, and in Ukraine, where he's now authorizing U.S. intel to supercharge Ukrainian drone strikes mm-hmm. on Russian territory,
Jason, what you're saying here, I'm going to throw it back to Michael here, is that, you know, Trump kind of, he ran against the deep state, as they call it, but now he's the poster boy for it, Michael.
Well, I think that I echo what Jason and Lionel have said about Trump. I think if we were to describe Trump's policy, domestic, foreign, in one word, it is unpredictable, deliberate unpredictability.
We all agree on that.
So if he campaigns on America first, a sense of isolationism, not getting involved in foreign entanglements. I mean, one thing that we cannot fault Trump on is that he is not the first person running for president that did a complete 180 on his campaign promises. I mean, Obama promised to close Guantanamo Bay Monday morning, 8 o'clock. And that never happened. So what you campaign on is very different from what you actually enact. And I think that we also can agree here, at the risk of speaking for everyone else, that I'm ultimately wondering whether or not this is Trump's campaign, whether this is Trump's war, or whether he is really driven by a number of opportunistic individuals close to him. I have to really think about Vance, Rubio, Steve Miller, among others. And even though Trump has distanced himself from John Bolton, he is absolutely taking page after page, chapter after chapter from John Bolton's, you know, change the regime and worry about the consequences later. I mean, and to what Jason had rightfully said, you know, he has gutted all of American foreign policy's soft power, U.S. aid, National Endowment for Democracy. We're not interested in human rights, political rights, civil liberties.
Yeah,
in
but Michael, before,
it's all
before
about the dollars.
When you and I went to bed before, when we think we're thinking that the attack on Iran was going to start, he was going to save protesters. So yeah, maybe you've gutted the institutions, but the ideas, the rhetoric is the narrative is still out there of America saving the world, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case. And I don't think anybody believes it anymore. I mean, this is, you know, how to spot a color revolution before it completes itself. I mean, this is, I mean, when you begin to start seeing the very same people cheering on, hoping for human rights to prevail in a country, the very same people that have been orchestrating genocide in Palestine, you really have to wonder how sincere they really are about the well-being of people in a country that, look, I mean, it's Iran. Iran is almost, you know, up there, public enemy number one as far as American foreign policy is concerned. So why is it that we all of a sudden care about
I mean, maybe we should care about ICE killing, shooting a woman in the head three times, okay?
Yes.
There you go again. The empathy strategy doesn't work for me. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask Lionel if it works for the American people. So on that note, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the world turned upside down. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the world turned upside down. Okay, let's go to Lionel. One of the reasons why Lionel so frequently appears on this program is because he represents the fishbowl, as he likes to refer to it. Lionel, a lot of the issues that we've talked about on this program, Greenland, Venezuela, Iran, I've looked at some of the public opinion polls, and people are not necessarily for it, but they're not against it either, okay? And that's one of the reasons I asked Jason, is it, you know, is this a foreign policy of theater, of impulse? Because we all associate, we have certain things that we associate with Trump, and he likes to win. And so this is a win, and people like to win. But I'm looking at the MAGA movement here. This is a betrayal in many ways, but I don't see the cracks that so many people have been telling me about. They're more or less going along with it for now. Lionel.
I always advise friends of mine to watch you. I said, if you want to know what's going on in this country, watch other people say what they think is going on in this country. Because being in the fishbowl, we have no idea about the other fishbowls that are concomitantly existing. Let me explain one thing, just give you an idea of how it's phrased. Venezuela, okay? Venezuela was you've got it wrong, Peter. It's not a military action. It's a legal action. He was indicted. He was indicted in a federal court. He was apprehended. Peter, don't you understand there's a fentanyl and drug problem, that our streets are being destroyed by drugs that are being perfused and extravasated through the streets, and we're going to get this guy. And then when they brought him into New York, he acted like a clown, like a lunatic. He's waving and good morning, and people are saying, look at this despotic ruler. Now, you can laugh all you want, but there's a lot of people here who say, that's exactly right, we're going to get him. Now, you might say, fentanyl is from Mexico. Details, details. It's perception. It's about doing something. And, for that matter, bloodless. Now, Greenland, good luck with that one. Most people are like this, Greenland. Because as you may or may not know, and I'm not proud to say this, many of my fellow Americans are not exactly the most adept at being geographically sentient. So consequently, they don't know if it's Greenland, Greenville, Green. They're not sure exactly where it is. All they know is so far, there's really been no bloodshed. And you know, if we want to rattle a few sabers, so be it. Iran, very much in conclusion, this is portrayed as, look at this insanity. People pulled out, slaughtered on the streets. Look at this, look at this, look at these lunatics. We've got to do something. We've got to You see what I'm saying? Yeah. What you think is irrelevant, what the front pages say is more important, vis-a-vis this fishbowl.
But a corollary to that is the American people are lied to 24/7 about almost all of these events here. Okay, Jason, let's kind of shift this a little bit here, because the world turned upside down. Well, you may ask, for whom? Well, I would say it's for the global north, where the Europeans, the members of NATO, European members of NATO, they've lost their impunity, their privilege. Is that now Trump can pick on allies right now? I don't use capital A allies like you see in the media all the time. I mean, Denmark, well, you got the short end of the stick. The U.S. runs the alliance, and it's going to get what it wants, okay? Sorry. And you want to leave? Go ahead. No one will notice, okay? I'm not promoting this idea, but that's how it is presented, okay? Raw power is on the menu, on your bingo ticket in 2026. Jason.
Yeah, so, you know, what the mainstream media and what the U.S. government always tells the American people is that NATO is somehow this kind of multilateral alliance of equals. That's what they say. But the thing is that it's very likely that Europe is going to be forced into a position where they have to give up Greenland via some kind of deal. So whether it be a military expansion, that's Denmark's probably preferred path, which would be offering the U.S. New bases, greater security control under existing treaties, you know, framing it as sort of a win without ceding sovereignty. There's also the potential Compact of Free Association, which is modeled largely off of the Pacific Island agreements. You know, the U.S. would grant all these exclusive military rights for subsidies.
Jason, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the U.S. has a military base there already, okay? I mean, you're looking at very legalistically and I think rationally, but Michael, Trump doesn't think it that way. Negotiation for him is humiliation. He is making a demand, and he will get what he wants. And there's not going to be any of this niceties about it. He's sending a very strong message. There are great powers. There's Russia. There's China. There's the United States. We can throw in India, possibly Brazil. Everybody else, it doesn't really matter. Sorry, that's the way of the world. I'm not promoting that, but that's how he sees the world. Michael.
Well, for Trump, I don't think that he would include Brazil, because that means that there's a rival in Latin America.
And that would include BRICS, yes, of course.
And that would include BRICS, which was also one of the reasons for our little foray into Venezuela, because Venezuela was not yet a BRICS member, but certainly had very lucrative arrangements with Russia and China. You know, in this sense, the Trump administration, and who knows if this is going to happen, but right now they're operating on the policy of I dictate the reality and everyone has to respond. It would be considered unthinkable. It would be ridiculous for any other president to even think of annexing Greenland simply because it's not ours, because it's, you know, it's a NATO member.
You don't need to annex it, because you can get whatever you want through a trilateral deal.
Provided that Denmark agrees to it. Now, if Denmark is absolutely left alone at this, then they have no choice. Macron has said that they will side with Denmark. I have no idea what the UK is going to do. This has created fractures within NATO. Other NATO members, absolutely, at this stage of the game, should say, the minute that you put your sights on Greenland, we invoke Article 5. This is how you stop Trump, is through direct military deterrence. And if you are not going to do that, Trump, Rubio, Hegseth, Miller, everyone, they all know no one is going to stop them. And they create this, as you, I think, rightly point out, these spheres of hegemonic influence. What the Trump administration wants, this is more so Vance and Rubio and Miller, among others, is full control of the Western Hemisphere. This is Monroe Doctrine 2.0. It now applies to not only everything south of the Rio Grande, but it also applies to Canada, to Greenland, maybe even Iceland.
Lionel, is that popular with the Trump space and across the political spectrum? The Monroe Doctrine is grossly misunderstood, but everyone on this program has a general idea of what most people think it is. Is Pax Americana in the Western Hemisphere, will that sell? Is it selling?
What's selling right now is, and I hate to be blunt, and I don't hate to be blunt. I'm not going to lie to you. I love being blunt. It's who I am. But I've got to tell you this. To most people right now, they're saying, listen, you can sit and you can talk about all your hegemonic gobbledygook and this is wrong and this is, but if you're at the top of the food chain and you're number one and you run the show, you can sit there and say, ouch, ooh, that hurt. But the bottom line is when all is said and done, what matters to the world is simply this, power. Whoever's in control, that's it. And we will take again, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody, but we will take all of the slings and arrows of your brilliant evaluations and analyses, and they certainly are. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, if he can pull this off and he can leave, and his legacy is going to be one of the day that America got its oomph back. There's a movie or something to it, sister got her or whatever back. This is what people are saying. They're saying simply this. This is the America we. The last time we saw this was during Ronald Reagan, when people feared us. Now, granted, it might be for different reasons, but so far, not bloodshed. Things are okay. We've got some domestic problems here and there. There are too many bowls and plates in the air for people to figure this thing out. But the bottom line is this: power rules, and so far, he's power.
Yeah, but, you know, to all three of my guests here, that kind of attitude to the international system in geopolitics can be translated domestically, and it becomes just as lawless and only raw power rules. I don't think we all want to live in a world like that, but that's a topic for another program. Jason, you know, we've forgotten some important players here. China, Russia. Okay, I can throw in India. I agree with Michael, maybe not in Brazil at this point here. Are they going to accept Trump's rules?
Most certainly not. When Trump was threatening secondary tariffs on India, they immediately went to China to establish some sort of alliance against the tariffs. He is alienating a lot of allies from not just India but also Vietnam, because we've had a relationship with them since 94, and Vietnam and China are closer than ever now because of the tariffs. But I don't think this is going to play out. For example, well, first of all, one reason why he's going into Greenland is because he wants to counter to some degree the Belt and Road Initiative and the Northern Sea Route in the Arctic that the Chinese and the Russians are currently working on. But right now, Europe's entire ruling elite, it's firmly embedded in this kind of Atlanticist power structure. I mean, their legitimacy and their privilege depends pretty much entirely on it. And so they will defend the system. And, you know, Putin said in his Empire of Lies speech.
But Jason, what tools do they have to defend themselves? They've denuded themselves. They've debased themselves. They have no tools left. Michael, please finish up the program. We got 30 seconds left.
I mean, look, the only thing that I can say, and this can be a jumping point for our next talk here, is that Trump seems to really be flying by the seat of his pants.
I agree.
And this is ultimately what we began with. History will tell us whether he played an awesome gamble or whether he is the incompetent moron that many of us think that he is. But right now, again, insanity dictates reality.
And that is the world that we live in, gentlemen, in 2026, and it's only 2 weeks in. So buckle up and brace for impact. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in New York and in Prague. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.